established here is we set you up to do this circuit on your own, and now basically the issue that you have to decide for yourself is, it doesn't come to science and engineering. All stuff in Hokobashihara runs up against the Code of Science. And there are basically two ways to do it. You either start with the Code of Science and say, let's see what the Code of Science would say about this, or let's see what we can accomplish within the confines of the Code of Science, or you say, well, the Code of Science has one shot, but it's one shot like any other shot. Right? So it's kind of an operon. Right, the Wanakaran, right, the Wanakaran, how much weight does Wanakaran have? It is, right, it is still giving us weight so many returns. Now, I'm not taking a position as to which of these is necessarily the correct Talakic methodology, and I want to say that it's not clear that one of them gives you more space automatically than the other. And here, right, when we're talking about there are only three levels, there's the text, interpretation, and meaning. And you can create the space between the text and interpretation, between the interpretation and the meaning, right? The interpretation and meaning, the gap that I do with the real world. To me, the best model of a Sosei who creates his space almost entirely after he finishes interpreting is Rodos Gap in the Lama Zoho. If you read the Lama Zoho, right, you will see that he almost never reads the Sugya with any degree of creativity, and he cites almost nobody other than the Stav Sofer, basically. And the Kizer Shavaro. You could read through the whole Malam Ha'olil and basically had no idea that Rodovus Yachin ever bothered looking at Rishonim. He was minimal use of Rishonim. No Achronim outside of it. It's the Kizer and the Stav Sofer is ready. And yet, his chavot are amazingly creative and practical. Because just after he finishes the interpretation, in the, right, between the what we call application, right? The application interpretation, he's fully conscious of the gap between his precedent and reality. There's always a gap because reality is never exactly in conformity with precedent unless you interpret the precedent and reality as abstraction. Right? But if you pay attention, but if you say that the precedents are dealing with specific cases, and there will always be details about your case that are different than the case of your precedent. And so Rodovus Yachin, right, is a tremendously creative Sosei, even though in his tzach, he is almost never as many as tzach a creative omdu. Now, he's a tremendously creative scholar in other areas. As an academic scholar, he's a tremendously creative scholar, but that was not his method in tzach. His method in tzach was really, as far as I can tell, was really extremely straightforward. Reading very, very tight, very conformity to precedent. He just about never disagrees with anybody. He will explain, if anybody cites anything against him, he will explain how that's not really against him. You can find a way to reconcile it. That's a perfectly legitimate way of doing it. Another way, which is to say that, you know what, I'm going to assume that there's an exact precedent for every case, so I'm going to open up the precedent to mean multiple things. Okay, so what I've been doing so far is to give you the option of finding your space in the text as opposed to in the gap between the text and between the text and reality. And I have to decide two levels. One is intellectually, do you find the Kabbalah time convincing? If you find it convincing, is there any here that then like it's pretty simple to work in terms of that? But the second question, which is even if you don't find them convincing, maybe you find them binding anyway. Right, this is before we get to the question of how convincing, like, we always have to figure out whether, do you think that he's so convincing or so authoritative that you can't even rely on other positions to shut the clock? Or do you think that, well, you know what, he functions like the standard halakha in most places, which means that when you're under pressure, you're talking that way. When you're under pressure, then you're kind of looking at other things. But you certainly, right, the way in which you have to write, the framework that you're talking in is radically different depending on whether you take the first time as a given or not. Or, of course, the third option, which is to claim that nobody has really understood the public plan previously in terms of the public plan, but it holds away that creates space in a... what we will, you know, I think we've shown already is that the sheets on which the public plan relies, particularly Leo Cervenioda, which are often seen as not their positions, right, can also be understood as pretty unique their positions. Right, because we tell that in order to preserve the formal Isser, he has to open up some new practical ground for Isser, and it's not at all clear that anyone can ever tell you anything about it. Right, it's not clear, right, because there's always a defense. There's so many grounds in which Lashon Hara becomes a government Musser. In order to avoid saying it's Musser in front of three, you lose almost nothing in front of anybody. Right, so you have to be very careful about the legal effect as opposed to the formal effect. Okay, so let's take a look at the some years, and again, that's logical choices. Some years, the way the summer structure we start with forgiven, we just work from there. Alright, so presumably the push topic is, let's figure out what the biblical models are and let's create the way those biblical models ramify. Whether you do it because you think that that's the finish, that's shot in the finish and you want to start the finish, or whether it's because it happens that there are certain rabbinic interpretations of finish, that whether you think those are shot or drafted by the better or worse, or if not so, tell me explicitly you're not really starting to attack. That's a good way to organize. Another way to do it is, which is parallel in some of these topics, is organize it around the family's vote. And the family's vote will tend to tell you, here's the least that we're organizing around, that I'm going to interpret around, and everything will get to organize around specific categories. Like that I learned from Rosenzweig. When we did the comment in my first year, right? So we spent the first 4 months doing the canvas book. And seeing how people in specific categories being able to express the fear and things like that. I didn't do that this year. The reason I didn't do that this year was because almost there's very little formal halakhic material based on Slytherin. The material based on Slytherin is almost always what we tend to call a goddess, leaving aside the question of whether the halakha distinction is real. And therefore, it seems to me that if we start at Mitzvah, we end up coming from a Mitzvah perspective rather than a law perspective from the very beginning. And so I adopted cut all the goddess out of the whole Mitzvah now until this point. And if we have a chance to evaluate the formal halakhic material on its own without being heavily influenced by that. But now we have to start. So first, if you want to start with Lashon Hara, you have to talk about Miriam. And Miriam Hara. And Miriam, we all know Miriam said Lashon Hara, she got Torah. Right? So everybody who says Lashon Hara gets Torah, right? They find it to the Torah, and the Torah is the most Yishenna, right? Masira. This is something that we've all internalized from early years. The intersection between Miriam, Lashon Hara, and Torah. So the problem for this, as Chaim points out, is that Miriam, if you want to take a position, everything is coming through. And look, we have this drasha from the Sifri, which says, the Lamer Yisrael Gibra Ela Shalom Tama Shalom Moshe, the Lamer Yisrael Shalom Moshe, the Yishlach Shalom Moshe, the Lamer Yisrael Shalom Kach Nensha, Hamidabra Bignutio Shel Kabera, the Rabbi Malata Kamba Kama Shalom Yonshu. So it sounds like doing something in public is worse. That's when we claim anything said in front of three is better. Okay, so I gave you the cheap way out of this, which is just to claim, oh, that's the position of culture can put the position of Isha, and we all talk about it. Right? So that's the husband way to just get rid of this source if you wanted to. How did you guys understand, what did Miriam, in this drasha, what did Miriam do that was wrong? As precisely as you can, right? What did she do that was wrong? So, tell me. What did Miriam do that was wrong?
Well, I guess it was an issue of whether she
spoke beforehand
or not
beforehand. Okay, so finally, what did she do? She spoke, wherever she spoke, what did she say that was wrong? What did she say? And why did she say it?
while she spoke. I don't know, it's not clear.
Okay, not clear in this text what she said. What's her best guess? What do you think she said?
I don't know
exactly what
she said, but you know, whatever
she
said, it wasn't for a good
purpose. It wasn't for a good purpose. Doesn't it say it was?
No,
it's not for a good purpose. Shalom Yibra, Ella, the Sarai, when she spoke, Lani Yasa Shalom, which not for Shalom Akron, she spoke to the benefit of Moshe, to the praise of God, and to support the world, and she got punished. So, that worked, right off of Kamala Kamala. Right, but Miriam spoke with the best of intentions. Right, the Miriam spoke with the best of intentions. And she still got punished. Yeah.
So, it's important to understand that there's two parts of this equation, right?
Yeah.
So, the Ravi makes really entire distinction between the Bunch and Moshe.
Yeah.
Right? When we figure out is can you so
no, that is kind of it. Miriam didn't even speak.
Right.
Didn't even speak with Bunch.
Sorry, right. The question is, she didn't speak for Ravi. Did she speak for Kanuso?
No. She spoke.
Did she speak for Kanuso? There's no use either.
Well, there was no good, or there was no intention of good.
I'm trying to figure out. I don't know.
I think there was no intention of good.
Okay.
There's no intention of good. All right, Maria. So what?
I'm having a hard time also, at least in this particular midrash, translating the word good. Right? Because on the one hand, she's saying it for his benefit, but maybe she's saying they think that could be interpreted as unfavorable, or objectively unfavorable, but tovaka.
Good.
So we're that's the trouble.
Good. Okay.
It's also not
it's Lishma Choshal Moshe, not Lishma Choshal Moshe. That's right. Well, Moshe.
Yeah, but that's not necessarily the exact opposite.
Oh, good. Good. That's right. Okay. I agree. This one is very hard. It's very hard to understand it all right. We can take the chance of interpreting it in light of the next one, all right, but it's not necessarily the same thing. Okay, so the next one tells us that the context clearly is that, okay, she saw, how did Miriam, right, so right, we know that this is the standard of being interpretation is that she understood that that Moshe and Sipporah were physically separate. Right, so the ultimate concept of Lashon Hara is that Miriam mentioned to Aaron or at some point, right, the people seem to read the text as if it's clear that Miriam said to Aaron because Miriam's name comes first. And people argue, right, X and Y, Z means X, right? But I don't know that I'm convinced by that, but let's take this in this universe, right? Miriam speaks to Aaron, and what she says is that she saw, right, she said that Moshe is no longer, it's physically separate from Sipporah, and the way she found it out is that Sipporah stopped putting on makeup. And she asked Sipporah, why aren't you putting on makeup? And right, Sipporah said, your brother doesn't care, and from that, she deduces, right, Deborah would like to argue that there must have been some intonation also, because it's always just saying Deborah doesn't like makeup. So apparently, I argue that culturally, maybe there are cultures in which it's just inconceivable. Somebody would go out without makeup. But whatever it is, she sees that Sipporah doesn't bother making herself attractive. And when Miriam asks her, Sipporah says her brother doesn't care. So Miriam knows, and she tells Aaron, and they both speak about it. Okay, right. Alternate version, right, in which she hears Sipporah saying, what are those women when everyone else turns out to be the GM? And nobody cares about Sipporah being. And nobody cares about Sipporah saying, well, she's not here. But it's an important point in this narrative that Sipporah doesn't get to us. Even though Sipporah is the one who tells Miriam in this misunderstanding. We can figure out why. And it may be important in the long run that what she didn't talk to somebody? Right, what she's supposed to do? Yes, what he said.
I mean,
got motion for approval. She doesn't.
But she's still fainted about him.
Yeah.
Okay. So fair point. I have not seen anybody analyze the question of why Miriam is more guilty than Sipota. And rather, it seems to me it may matter when we get taken up in the last week of the justice. But really, with the question that it matters, what do people do when they are experiencing suffering because of somebody else? You know, you're really supposed to, if you really want to interpret the Lashon Hara, to tell people that you have to suffer and die. That's a reasonable interpretation of the Lashon Hara, is that it makes me feel better, not an excuse to think, right, to tell other people nasty things about, right, nasty things about anybody, including yourself. On the other hand, we tend to have a modern definition that not talking is destructive. And so how we balance Lashon Hara with what I would call, for once, not the good, the therapeutic model. And then usually I have lots of trouble with the model of professional, of professionalizing friendship. But, okay, you know, when you have a professional model or not, you can, right, it's just a standard thing, well, you better talk to somebody about that.
If I talk to a therapist,
not because the situation will improve, it might just be because I will be able to cope with it better.
Yeah, you could do it,
Okay, see, part actually is asking.
Just saying, just get it out. I think it's just bother.
Maybe. Hey, okay, we're, you
know. Hey, okay. It's one of them is not trying to initiate the conversation. She is asked about it.
Yeah.
So.
The right thing we have to say is, does she have an obligation not just to not talk about it, but to make sure that she acts in a way that covers it up, literally? Right, by putting on makeup. Right, do people have an obligation to go on as if, nothing is happening? Right, that's it, right. Now that could be understood that way because, right, if your actions are Lashon Hara, then that's a really hard burden to put on people. Yes, please.
Yeah,
not in the second version. Right? The second version, when she says, "Wounded their wives," right? That's pretty clear. That one's pretty clear. Like, what she's saying. Yes.
Is there anything you would suggest in the
second version? I don't remember. Honestly, I didn't make it up. Right, the question of whether I compare two versions and end up deciding if it belongs in or not, I'm not sure. Well, I'll try to stop it before I land. I just didn't remember. And this is a two-minute system, I assume that there was an example of Deep Bow, right, so just skip to one. Miriam, she didn't intend to speak about her brother Lignai, but rather Lasheva. What are the terms Gnai and Sheva? Dana, what do you think?
Gnai is like detrimental. Sheva is like to improve.
So, does that mean that she was intending to compliment Moshe?
No. To Sheva is not to be, but rather to improve him by saying you're doing the wrong thing. Stop it, or start, whatever, and and that will improve him by doing this.
Good. So my understanding is that the term deny here does not mean to disparage. I didn't intend to disparage as opposed to rather to intend to praise. What it means here is she did not intend to damage, rather she intended to benefit. And I think that tells you that probably goodness decreed means also, and that's why that requires us to be very careful reading such language, right? When goodness, which we tend to think means to speak negative of, right? Here it seems to redefine in terms of intention, right? To, the very big news is to speak with the intention of causing damage to, the intention of shaming. Right, so the statement here is that Miriam, right, so here, this one is really explicit, that Miriam's intentions were entirely to benefit Moshe and to increase Pre-Veridia. Out here. I encourage you to look at that room, see if you can find it that way. I think Sheva still needs improvement. Right? So the bare big knife, positing here can be that. I don't have to go to the group to do something else. I guess you're different. That'll be on. That will find. Yes. Michael, what have you found? Interesting. Leave us in the middle there still. Yes, sir. That is Prince, though.
No, but in that case, Shabbat clearly does not mean, and Shabbat clearly means praise. But also in that case, you didn't clearly does not mean denigration.
That's
you,
consulting versus the improved situation. I mean, raises the Jews per se. It's just talking about the improved situation, having left Egypt and their
food. Well, it's Shabbat from a college bar food there, right? That's why
you follow up. No, but you might think about it, but you start with...
I agree. I don't know who's facing the Egyptians.
Okay, that is less research.
Okay, what I want to get to here, though, is... Okay, so what did Miriam... So Miriam mentions... It also says they never made Abfat here when she talks to Aaron. So she talks to Aaron. So I don't know what the story is, but what Abfat is saying, she only spoke to Abfat.
And Aaron?
Well, that's a possibility. That's a possibility that brothers and sisters don't count. We have to figure out why brothers and sisters don't count. And if brothers and sisters, right, and if that's just, you know, technical science somehow, or if it means that there are certain kinds of relationships, right, like, you know, obvious text tape adopted brothers and sisters, right, people who function as your brothers and sisters, which can be generalized.
That would be better, best friend.
Maybe.
Maybe that's
a good one. No, I don't know, it's hard. It's really kind of long.
Maybe. It's very science. Well, it's just very, why does the red carpet come out of it,
right? I mean, but I know, like, one of the popular drushes here is also to the Vermirion, right?
So yeah.
Even though grammatically the reason that is because she's positioned personally is all over the place, popular drushes that she was only speaking.
I was just listening, yeah.
And he wasn't
the carpet. But it's not the hell of a dance, but he's talking too hard. Mm-hmm. Okay. But it seems to me like the...
Maybe
we're in the obvious one.
Maybe the
Congress is
out there for
much longer. Ah. I thought it was people whose names begin with an olive.
I thought it was people who are coming down
on it. People who are down on it. Or Jews. The one thing that seems to be unavoidable here, stage one, is that Miriam spoke with the best of intentions. All the Hetairim seem to assume that everyone seems to assume that Mutter was Shalos. So if you want to say, right, so the problem here is I think that the plan is going to prove too much. If you're interested in showing that Rabbi must be worse than the Ethiopian, but here even Benelah and Asmah gets into Rabbi. So this is, can't be halakhic, right? Yes.
It's clear that she had best intentions, but also clear that, well, she made a mistake that God expected her not to make.
Yeah.
I think it's not the best intentions, that she, meaning she, was that had she thought a little bit more about it, you know, by her good fact that, you know, the following circuit, it's clear that she should have known better.
Yeah.
And therefore, you know, it wasn't really the best intentions, because, you know, had she thought about it, she'd been a little bit more careful, she would have realized that she was wrong in her attack in the first place.
Yeah, great intention is still going to be saved.
Right, yeah, she was under the... She did, which means one of the things is claiming that, you know, it is actually for a benefit or something that you can't possibly have figured out that it wasn't for a benefit, then it's much better. But if you just make a mistake, right, that you shouldn't have made, and you could have figured out, I mean, then that still would be like Nara, and thereby limit the extension of the set.
Well, you know, the thing can't be, at least be a show gig, right? It can't be honest, right? That's what you're saying.
Right. And it's something, like, or even more, it could be the whole Shia. I mean, you can just be gross negligence that you just
think. Yeah, that's because, like, the... Yeah, you're only because you're working against the point of the measure. The point of the measure is to show you how terrible it is, and even if you do it with the best of intentions, you get punished.
Right.
So the more you measure your intentions, the less point the measure has.
Sure.
Yes, I wouldn't read it that way because of that. It seems that I might address it. Okay, yes, Michael and Jesse.
I'm just not remembering very well.
Okay, so you can argue that the Tanya is just making, he's not saying this is a halakha, I'm just saying that we're on a scale of everything functions, but this teaches us that Rabbi is worse than Yafid, and even though in this case it seems to imply that Yafid is after, and he's going to argue that really this kind of Lashon Hara should be completely mutter, but he's not, we're not taking that implication of this, we're only going to take the other implication of this. Okay. You can play with that. Now, what exactly was the Lashon Hara?
The second
address,
she was trying to
infuse her. Right. So, Moshe had separated from his wife, and that was because... That was in her... Because she was claiming it was unjustifiable. But she claimed Moshe had errors. Yes.
Maybe she was just revealing
president to make sure that Mustafa should be removed. The public make it clear that, you know, that, you know, that there's some issue about how you have to talk about it. The plus most shows the planet, you know, in our own, and we keep going kind of above and beyond when the planet.
Now, the underlying problem is that if you insert Mary's intentions and things for the best, then she fits every hetzer at that point. Is it, right? She's trying to help Moshe do tshuva, improve the world, right? And she had no ulterior motives. So, the Sid has this idea that there are ways that, now there is Shema, is something which you have to do, but as opposed to if you do a mitzvah and it turns out to have consequences other than those you intended, then if you act legally but destructively, you're fucked. But if you act illegally but destructively, even though if it turned out right, it would have been a mitzvah, but you are right. But when you act illegally, you have an absolute imperative to get everything right. Alright, so the Sid says that Al-Kainan Moshmin Bello Kesbel means you have to think about whether maybe the car of Lavera is worth it. They went through this, right? Did they go through this? Okay, the Sid says, Al-Kainan Moshmin Bello Kesbel, and Moshmin Elon Moshmin Yitzhak, and Moshmin are those people who control the Yitzhara completely. Bello Kesbel, and then the Hashem kind of talking against Seda, they have said it about against Kara. So the Sid says, I understand. If you're Moshmin of Yitzhaka, why do you have to do the Kesbel? Don't do the Yitzhaka of the Kesbel. And so he derives from that it must be that there are times when the Aver is worth it when it is not. Right, so even people who have complete control of the Yisr have to address the question of whether to act off of it. And he talks about this specifically in the context of a famous tshuva about people who are perhaps a little bit too zealous in Mitzvah and things like that.
Did we discuss these
Midrashim
and Midrashim history?
I don't know if Kirsten's history, but it comes up all over in Hamek Dover.
I'm just curious if you actually discussed this particular...
Yeah. What is this? Lashon Hara?
This particular, he has a Parashat history. So he may actually discuss
yeah.
exactly
yeah.
what
I just said. Yeah, I don't have the history of Hamek Dover. But he only says that people can make mistakes about this. Right? There's two things. One, if you make a mistake, you get punished anyway. And that's Baal Peor. And Baal Peor was a Jew thinking that they were going to threat. And he gave them a thought that they were engaging in the Nusra Dabba Mizara. It's like going to the bathroom on the idol, and it turned out to be that it was a Kedarka and a Magetha. I think even though their Kavana was entirely to embarrass the idol, they still get punished because you try to do a Rehla Shema, right, the Obed of Mizara, but really a Blitana, and they get it wrong. Stop. And he says, and the second thing he says is that if you have mixed Kavana, you get punished. So that Yitzchak and Yaakov stealing the Bechora. We get punished not for stealing the Bechora, but for being happy when Esau screams. Because that shows that his Kavanah was entirely Shema. So you can envision a world which is run, you know, where you gotta do your best to give the information you need to give, even when that would otherwise be Lashon Hara, and recognize that on this one, you get Nitzan to the Tara. You get it wrong, you get it wrong. Right? Same Lashon Hara is always in the Derev Lishma. Right? That's one law. And then the question is, can you live with a world in which actions change character, right, because of things that may not even be in your control? Like, what happens if, in this universe, rather than I say this well, it doesn't work? So the Torah, I don't feel like, in this Israel, I said to God, I told you that your husband is gambling away the money because I thought that way you would be able to hold your family together. But instead, it just went to a huge blow up in a divorce, and everyone's worse off. Well, so what? You tried to write, you gave me a really small Lashon Hara, it turned out badly, you're stuck, it wasn't as well. Right, then if you guys live in the Red Sea, the cheer I usually give to about this idea is about learning Torah Shel Lishma, which is one place, or many places, learning Torah Shel Lishma is a very bad idea. Right? Noach Lo Shel Nikra, right? Mutar Shem Itapeh Shel Yatzor Al Panav, and all sorts of things with his message, which is really bad when the service does not respond. On the other hand, he's saying himself, well, there's no respond. Right? So all the substantive say, well, there's two kinds of Lo-Lishma, the bad kind and the good kind, you should avoid the bad kind and the good kind. And you can play through all the options, but I try to show this here is that it doesn't help me decide what to do. It doesn't make me face, because everybody, there is no kind of not Lishma, which there isn't enough quality of that, whether I should do it or not do it. Everyone agrees that the not Lishma is good and the not Lishma is bad, but no one can agree on which one is which. So you still get stuck. And then if I am in the room, it comes along, the wonderful sheet is only one kind. And then somebody showed me actually the wrong one says it's more such as the back of the thing. I went further than I know the room, and then somebody last time did a share. Meeting somebody. And they quoted a Rambam saying the same thing. I looked it up and it was at least possible. But the Rambam was the same sheet that was saying the room. Now there's only one kind of not Lishma. And not learning not Lishma is always deadly. But if it turns out well, you get Lishma, then you get forgiven retroactively. So the time you're learning, not Lishma, you have no way of knowing. And so it's a snare share, right? Because people get very uncomfortable with the notion that their actions, whose goodness or badness cannot be determined in advance. Right? Because the one thing Allah is supposed to do is make you secure. Right? So this is a share that, you know, for the people who like living with, and you like living with spiritual risk. Right? Yes, religious children, I but, you know, people who like, you know, taking, you know, it's the bungee cord.
Are you usually going to contested people?
Well, actually, you know, that's like, you know, like the sharing of Shabbos, right? You know, that's the, you know, the like, the mind share, which I gave you guys. Right? So I am torn on the one hand. I think that people can't take risks. I think that that's not what religion is about. Religion is not about making life perfectly secure. And on the other hand, I think thrill-seeking is sort of an issue.
Are you arguing that this particular type of religion, thrill-seeking, is religion
supposed to be considered Vishnu? Is that okay? No. I'm arguing is that religion is not set up to enable you to live a life without taking chances. Right, but right, it's the premise that the purpose of halakha is to make sure that you never have to take a chance. In essence, right, I mean, you never have to take responsibility for your own actions. All you have to do is, right, all you have to do is game the system. Right, I don't like that religious attitude. It doesn't mean that just as life is not set up to stay, right, to stay locked in a room, right, wearing a filter and making sure you have armed bodyguards wherever you go with weapons that I can't point in. Right, and we're there to stop cars and tell yourself the story. It's not, right? You know, that doesn't mean that one has to, you know, go take safaris in a war zone. Right, so I think, you know, or run the Bolton Pamplona for that matter. Right, so I think there's a middle ground between running the Bolton Pamplona and crossing the street. And religiously they're the same thing. Religiously they're the same thing, although certainly, I understand the religious thrill seeking, I have to say. Much more than physical thrill seeking. I don't do any physical thrill seeking. But religiously, it's time to point on the edge sometimes. If you were like saying solemner and louder. Just playing with your words, if you were to do this meaningless, it's not really meaningless action. Minor spiritual thing.
Mikadesh
Chodeshim?
In
Mikadesh Chodeshim. They just saying the Gratha because of the...
If you say the Gratha, it changes your... It must be Mikadesh Chodeshim. No. Mikadesh was Mikadesh. It's only good to do the opposite. Then it's potentially you're implying that you're actually doing Kadesh Chodesh.
Uh-huh. No, I hadn't done that one for a while. Consider it now. But yes, there's the gen, you know, you put it out as a, you know, volume of the... spiritual thrills from the thread, the tension about it earlier.
Yeah, that is very spiritual.
So
really...
Yeah. Learn the cheerful thrusting of Jeremy on tension about it. The end of the grid is the coolest. So, yeah. Okay, so that is what... And this is the point I want to make out of the analogy of Graham. One is to raise the question of whether there should or if a heterophobia hara that is not has not been formally mentioned so far, which is simply the need to talk. And secondly, to raise the question of the connection between the inspirational material and halachic material. My problem thing is, you want to think, you know, it does seem that there's a statement here which says that Rabin is worth suggesting, but it's also a statement that seems to him, you have to go fairly radical on what the halacha is if you want to take this halachic way. Okay, then we have a bunch of other examples. We have Motzi Shemra.
Sorry,
the second issue is that Miriam has every heter that we're going to use in the book. And so the only way to take this as a halachic text is if we take this theological position I just said, which is that all the heter and lashon hara are only if they work out right. Right? But if you get the consequences wrong, then all the good intentions in the world help you not at all. And while I like that position in Torah Shul Lishma, it's a radical position to take, and you should be aware of it. Yes, sir.
The other position to take is the position that Michael laid out, I think, which is that the hard time isn't really using this as a halachic text, but this text shows very clearly that in the hierarchy of, she may have had a lot of time in the world and been punished anyway, and if we said it would be Moser, and she says that it isn't okay for her. But what this simply shows is that in terms of the logic behind the common understanding of that Tosfos is on the face of an understanding of the Afeklata as a heter, right? Couldn't possibly be the real logic, but because we know.
Okay, I agree.
You know, I mean, you don't have to.
You just be setting up the scale.
Exactly.
Right. The text is not right. We'll take the scale of values from the Agadah without putting the same weight in the scale.
I think that's a really
good. We'll get to it.
Very charitable.
Sure. We'll get to it. Okay. The second thing is Hotzat Shemra. So Hotzat Shemra. So the client's argument goes as follows. As part of the Motzi Shemra, it's from the case where a man comes to court and questions his bride's virginity. And in that case, we say that he has to choose her to son of. So from the fact that we derive the Motzi Shemra from the case of a man coming to court where there's certainly three people present and accusing her to her face, of adultery, so we see that lashon hara can't be mutter if he's made three, and we say the afi pasta and the afi mara, because here we derive the ashara, but the shemra dafka from those kids. Okay, so how do you really react to that argument?
Why else do you do the same thing?
Anyway, I do the same thing.
I mean,
like,
why do you,
shouldn't
that
be on
the
same thing
between
putting shame around
the category?
Okay, right, so one easy response to those claims is to claim that, yes, of course it is worse to say things. To say shekir v'ra'lus, that is to say truth v'ra'lus, we can say there's a virtue, but right, the shekir v'ra'lus is just expanding the category of defamation. At least the first time you can say no, if saying in front of three people is worse. Right, and the point is right then anything, right? So right, that means that we don't give you points for those, so we take off points for those.
I'm not sure where the case of, I mean, the only equation of the Babbari and the Baiti mean the same thing. I'm not sure where we're getting degrees from. Where is one getting better and one getting worse?
Well, all we need to say is that it can't be that in front of three and the front of is Mutter, because the whole Azhara comes from a case which is the 4-3 and Afimara. Right, so those of Terim as such must be false. Right. Because the case which the Atara comes from a case which is like, you can't do this. Why? Because in the case which we say about there, which is in front of three and in front of the person.
And why is it
not there? Well, we learn to drive the Atara from there. Like we're saying, how do we know, right? How do we know that it's illegal to go and accuse your wife falsely and find her falsely of adultery? Because the Pasuk says, look to Rachel Hill. What is the act, what is the thing that's illegal that's talking about kind of judgment and accusing her, right?
Right.
We're asking, how do I know that it's illegal to be Moshe Shemra?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah?
And just to actually addressing that point, right? So
then... I think you have the punishment that you call Shafak Oyamah, right? And
say, right? The Chalukah makes a very, very specific kind of halachic argument here.
Yeah.
He's saying the pasuk of Moshe Shemra is Moshe Leif Rafil, right? We are living in a world where Rafilus is a subcategory, where Lashon Hara is a subcategory of Rafilus. And I think he doesn't say this explicitly, but he's basically seems to be following the Rambam categorization of Rafilus and Lashon Hara. He seems to assume all the other Rishon, he explicitly says that Rashbam had that too, because, I guess, he says it. I don't know why he thinks that. Different, I guess, it must be that way. But I mean, if you read the Sukkiah, he thinks that there's three possible options for which Pasuk we learn Moshe Shemra from. So there are two steps in his argument that I think can be disputed, right? One is that maybe we don't learn Moshe Shemra from Moshe Leifel, and therefore Moshe Shemra isn't actually a case of Rafilus.
Right.
That's a whole different answer.
Right.
And second of all, right? And second of all, even if it is a case of Rafilus, right? And we do, and Rabbi Elazar is right. It's quite possible that there is no actual iser of Rafilus aside from Moshe Shemra.
Okay.
And, you know, that's what this Pasuk is telling us. And we don't hold like the Rambam who says there's a separate picture of Rafilus.
Right.
Those are, I think, two possible ways to... He makes a couple choices here, and it's not clear that the choices that have to be made. If he doesn't, they're not choices for which he makes an argument. He just simply makes them and moves on.
Okay, good. Other comments? Okay, let's make it broader, right? Then we have another Gemara in Arachim which distinguishes the Lashon Hara, the Tina, and the Parhesia. Okay, the Lashon Hara, the Tina requires less kapara, apparently, than Lashon Hara, the Parhesia. Well, I guess I could get to the point. Or we assume it's that way, well, not the other way, I suppose. We could claim it the other way, Lashon Hara, the Tina requires less, but it's hard. It's hard to say, I think. But it is a fucking conception. And then we have the case of the Shliach of the Beis Din, who we said it would have been Lashon Hara, for instance, right, for the Shliach Beis Din that Moshe sent to the Tana Aviram to come back and say they didn't come if it weren't for the fact that you were Shliach the Beis Din, and we learned that from that, in general, a Shliach Beis Din is allowed to come back and report to the court that people didn't listen to him. So we really have, I would say we have two classes, right? We have one is that things are mutter in court that would be us or otherwise. Right? And then we have some things are worse in public than in private. Right? So that's really how I would boil down the third kind of evidence. So the second one, some things are worse in public than in private. Yes. I'm willing to concede that some things are right, some things are worse in public than in private. The question is what things? Right, so deliberately false accusations designed with no purpose other than destroying somebody's reputation are worse in public than in private. Good. Right, possibly revelations about people's physically intimate lives are worse in public than in private. Right, I don't know if that tells me anything about so and so as a rotten pitcher, right, or anything like that. Right. So, I don't know. The second case is more complicated, which is right. it seems to be that there are things which Rabbi Chaim wants to argue, at least these Segulot. It's a plausible reading of the Segulot as they are, although we should at some point have to pay attention to the case of Mitzchazenik with Shadisha, as it looks like Lashonara as opposed to actually is Lashonara, and two more in the Segulot categories. But this equation that there are certain things that are mutter only in courts that would otherwise be usher. So you can frame it that way, that the only possible venue for this Lashon Hara, right, for these kinds of statements is court. That's one framing. Right, there are certain, right, Lashon Hara, right, things that are negative, or certain things that are negative about other people can only be said in court and not otherwise. Okay, and the second way of framing it, which is that things that are, right, that those are the extremes, and in the middle is a whole range of things, right, a whole range of things that are useful. I would just say that Chaim's argument is that, look, if you say it in court, and it were in court, it would be Lashon Hara, even though there were three people there. No, right, it's just like, the court is an example of a setting to get, right, to accuse people purposelessly in public. That is a bad idea, but it might be that when three people is part of the function, right, that there might be other things that accomplish the same purposes as the court. It might be that under some circumstances, publicity is the same thing as a court, or it might just be that a court is just an example of Toel. And just telling you the things that are up to, right? It's true that all those evasions still leave you with the claim that it can't be the case that all forms of Lashon Hara are mutter whenever three people are present. Right, that can't be. But if, for example, we understand the phrase Lashon Hara is referring to breach of confidentiality, and the examples we're talking about are dealing with slander, right, then it doesn't get you there at all. Aside from the question, which matters to me, of what happens if there is no court? Right, so that to me, right, those are technical things, and I think that you can all find your own ways out of this riot. It seems pretty clear to me that this is not, that the question of what would happen if it were in a court, as opposed to what happens in society, is not such a great analogy. But the underlying question is, we don't live in a Jewish society that has a functioning court. We don't have it's not practical, on the whole, to say that all cases should be taken to Beit Din. And if they went there, they wouldn't go anywhere anyway. Right, so when a Beit Din functions, right, we're talking about a fairly small community, where basically we're just saying, okay, we have a case, you bring it to court, and that's the same as making it public. Right? Once you can bring it to court, of course you can make it public. Right? That's one kind of vision.
So whatever the nation decided is purely voluntary. Or another way of framing it is courts play a role. And it's important, it's not just that Lashon Hara is mutter in court, it's that it's important for courts to hear the Lashon Hara. We want people to report. Yes, sir.
Couldn't we just say that in this particular case, because of the ineffectiveness of Beit Din, we rely on secular courts?
So here we rely on secular courts, but secular courts can't deal with lots of issues that are halachically, they're halachically problematic because they're not violations of secular law. Mm-hmm. For example, he was holding a gift.
Or
not going to Mikva. Right. Almost the Shemra may be slander is possible. Right. But what happens if the slander and defamation rules are different? Right. In those kinds of issues.
But the question I want is, what happens if you think of it not just in terms of Beit Din is a heder, but Beit Din is, right, that the society is set up. So there's a chiyus of the Beit Din under some circumstances. And in general, right, one of the purposes of Beit Din is to make sure that everybody knows. But it's like one of the purposes of going to Beit Din is publicized. It's not that it's mutter even though it's in public. And I said, one of the functions of Bayesian is to serve as a clearinghouse for these kinds of rights. So we have a threshold. The threshold is you have to be willing to go to Bayesian. Because if you're not willing to go to Bayesian, we're not interested in it because you don't really need it. Now, the after the Bayesian, they might go to another test, which is any three. And I said, right now, you got to look at those kinds of rights that way. He said, look, it would have been Lashon Hara. If it weren't Bayesian, the answer, right? If it weren't Bayesian, you didn't know it was on a tree. The answer is no. It would have been Lashon Hara if you didn't go to Bayesian. So in the absence of Bayesian, at least Bayesian is on a tree. Right? Because one of the functions of going to Bayesian, the function of going to Bayesian, right? Bayesian is there as a filter. Right? So that if you have an option, you should say it to Bayesian so that Bayesian can decide whether this information deserves to get out or not. But if Bayesian doesn't exist, it still has to get out. So at least, right? But we, on the same time, so our filter then is going to be, how are you willing to go to court? Our filter then is, are you willing to be interviewed? Well, I'll take all the questions in a minute. If we work on the premise, right, and this is right, on the premise that halakha, Torah, whatever you want, right, society, has an interest in making sure that people are aware of critical negative information. So then in the absence of a functioning Bayesian system, either because the Bayesian doesn't exist or because the Bayesian does not have adequate publicity outlets, because Bayesian is not the center of the community in the same way, then it may be that there is an obligation to construct other modes by which the same information can spread. So maybe, A, the threshold is lower or altered so that if the test is not, are you willing to come to Bayesian the test, are you willing to do X or Y? And it may be that whereas Bayesian, and just like the Shliach Bayesian, the Bayesian ideology, Bayesian has a right and obligation to publicize its verdict. It may be that society needs to find a mechanism for publicizing wrong, and therefore, in this argument, what I am suggesting as an initial suggestion is that in the absence of a functioning Bayesian system, there is a need for newspapers, which serve the purpose of enabling of creating a threshold by which, right, which determines which information gets spread or not, and making sure that baseless information is not spread, and that well-founded information is spread. Now, I would add as a qualifier to that, that even if you had a functioning Bayesian system, you still need, the Bayesian still has to be accountable in some way. There has to be a way to spread the Lashon Hara without the Bayesian. So that can function with, some kind of transparency, with some kind of transparency, accountability at the higher levels. Ultimately, it can never be up there to say, right, this is always the tension of the system that on the one hand, the greatest risk is if you allow Lashon Hara without the highest authority, and the other hand, the greatest risk is if you don't allow Lashon Hara without the highest authority, because the highest authority can never be questioned. Right? My tendency, as somebody who's heavily influenced by American history, is I would rather solve that problem by allowing Lashon Hara without the highest authority than not. Say, if I were designing a halakhic system, there would have to be an explicit, probably have to be the one group that it has to be much of a criticized in the Sanhedrin. Because they're the one group that, the Sanhedrin is the one group that is formally unaccountable to anybody else. So there has to be some kind of accountability to the public. That's if somebody asked me to do a Jefferson of the Halakhic State, right, that would be, that would be a big deal, and I don't know that I can, if that has been thought about in that way before. Okay. Let's take questions and then we'll jump to today. Avishai, what was your question? Yeah, I think that's a real tension and something that that really expressed that really, in the
the question of whether the rabbit is accountable to the population in that way is a real question. The family rabbits are accountable to each other. And the Gemara has a much more hierarchical structure that way, where rabbis are accountable to each other and not so accountable to the population. But we'll talk about the way Kol functions in rabbinic literature, where let's hold it off for a minute. I think it's a real issue, and it's certainly a challenge to me. And I don't think the system I set up is identical to the system the Gemara has with Chavarim and Amiharit. But in general, we have a resistance to caste systems that way. And so the question is whether we figure out whether we have a different value system, or it just happens that in the sociological reality of the Gemara, we had a war between the rabbis and the lower classes. And that issue comes up now, in Israel. Like in Israel you have a rabbinic caste, and you have people who hate them. Right? And there's a real question of how you want to deal with that. Doesn't mean that what is Kohen Torah required on the one hand, on the other hand, what is Kohen Torah really is regularly undeserved. I think that's an issue that really needs working out. I haven't done there are certain tendencies like that are claimed that there are no Talmid Chacham nowadays, so we suspend all the fines against people who insult Talmid Chacham per se, right? All the special fines. Right? So that's I would say evidence of the democratizing impulse. That we have universal education now functions, right? Makes it much harder to maintain that distinction. We don't really have a class on the Howards in America, universal Jewish education, quite the same way. But I think that's something that's on the board. And I am on the board. Yeah. Okay. Rob, Avi, Jesse.
I was just wondering, if your argument that Bayesian is supposed to kind of serve all these social functions, and that since we don't have Bayesian, then we could replace it. There are lots of other things that could have fueled this, fulfilled this purpose other than Bayesian. It could have been that you have a hazard to spread any messages you want if you take a stroll with that or something like that. And how come it was Dafka that you had to reinstate them? I'm wondering if the Bayesian has some sort of stronger function other than a sense of accountability.
Well, I think Bayesian serves as a publication mechanism. They were in a basement, it's public.
No, but you could say that you're allowed to...
You're allowed to, they're politicians.
No, say that you have to. Say that you have to tell, I think the Post Times makes this argument for as soon as 10 rather than 3. So say that you have to spread it even more.
I suppose they could do that, but I don't know why that's better. Because Basin certainly has to find out about these things. So they might as well, kill two birds with one stone. So Basin finds out about it, and everyone else who needs to, they will tell.
Right, but... At that rate, it's no longer a, it's never a necessity that
it doesn't survive me. No, maybe it's just an accident. That's my point, right? Maybe it's one way of getting this done. It's a perfectly fine way. But it's not the only way. And you raise the same question about when you talk about the analogy that I make is Rav Cook and many others' thesis, that the powers of the Malkus are really inherent in the population. And so there's no melech to top the powers of the melech devolves the population. Right? So some people treat it as, we have chila, the melech would have all these powers, but we managed to reconstruct these powers in the population, right? But really, we wanted the melech to have all these powers. Right? So if you look at my share on Malthus, the version I gave Harvard is online. I argue with Maharaj Chayat that actually the Melech has no power, except that's given to him by a constitutional compact. And that really, we live in the best situation, which is where sovereignty devolves to the people, and the king is supposed to be a symbolic sovereign. Right, there's no power whatsoever.
How do we
make kill people? I think we can't kill people, because it's not about the king, that's an hindrance. Do we have the power to kill people? Who's in the
system?
Yeah, so... I don't think capital punishment is illegal on those terms. The judicial style of execution is in advance, but the executive style of execution, so far as I know, functioned all through the Middle Ages and functions now if we wanted it. I don't want it. If we want it, I don't think there's any issue. So, by the same token, it may be that based in the social compact of how many times transferred a lot of these powers to the Bayesian, and for better or for worse, Bayesian has deteriorated to the point where it has no power. And now we need to write, so now the power of organizing a society such that, that necessary information is transmitted efficiently and unnecessary information is eliminated, reversed back to the society. And now we have to figure out, as a society, how do we accomplish these ends? And that would be the most radical analogy I could do.
Jewish society.
Well, Jewish society on its own, and then society as a whole. Like that's the measure, right? I don't know how non-Jewish society ever settled this. We have no luck about that at all. So they always have to negotiate that from scratch. All right, the first amendment, seems like a good place to start. That's the most radical thesis I can offer as a way of taking the hard science evidence and nonetheless creating this huge space between the text and reality. I'm not sure that I want to go that far. On the other hand, I do come from a premise that I can't imagine a moral society without a free press. I just can't imagine it. I can't see any conceivable way in which a society could function well without one. I have no faith whatsoever in any system that sets up an unaccountable elite as the government has determined for such things. And so I agree that hell if I have to find some way to do that. But you don't have to agree with me. I just set that out. And perhaps some other point, they can evolve into maybe you came to session to talk about what the experiences are that fundamentally this is what I had to teach you. We're gonna do one or two more studios over the next 2 weeks, and those will play out specific aspects of it. But in terms of the approach, right, so now you have pretty much everything, I think, that you need to think about. And I hope it's clear that you have these really broad issues that have to be addressed before you get down to the details. Both in terms of the conceptual issues, what you think Lashon Hara is, when you want to start from the question of what Lashon Hara is or what society ought to be, and in terms of what you think society ought to be, is your question primarily a virtue question, which is what ought people to be like in society, or a utilitarian question, which is how does information get transmitted efficiently in society? And those are two very different questions. And which stance you take on those will affect everything. I hope I make it clear that I am torn on this. That as a as a religious Jew, I care most about virtue, and as a political theorist, I care most. But as a political theorist of halacha, which is often how I conceptualize myself, I think about the efficient ordering of society, and the question is how to find the proper balance between that. Within halacha, you have to address the big issue about the extent to which you take the Chofetz Chaim as a given or not, and then the micro issue is about issues like how you deal with the introduction of Rishonim into a sugya, the word right, who may not have been part of the classical, the prior discourse, how you deal with positions that seem to be based on texts that don't seem to be compelling, issues like that. But really, at this point, right, I would encourage you to be thinking really hard about what are your Archimedean points on these issues. And then start thinking about how you organize the material so that you can write effectively about it. But just mostly my hope is this now on largely on your own. I pretty much said what I have to say, and now you should be thinking about how you want to organize it. The major thing I'm going to do from now after this is to come up with a fact pattern. With at some point so you can think of a specific case. I don't want you to be narrowed yet. I want you to really be thinking about what your Archimedean points are and fighting about them with each other, and then we can see how those play out in a specific sense.